shotglassdigital.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man that I'm pretty sure is a Zygon. Or maybe he was killed by Missy. Or maybe... I'm not sure. Adam Farmer.
Nice. You had me when you threw Missy in there. I was going to say that might not have been your strongest showing, and then you go and surprise me.
Look at that. It's been a while since I've gotten you to laugh out loud on one of these. I've been my intro game is weak.
I've done my best at holding my tongue. I know that early on there were some thoughts, some comments provided about the laugh track that we had going in the background. So I've tried to improve there, but you know what? You caught me off guard with the whole Missy and ongoing commentary there.
So we're going to have an extra special, I guess, double review this episode. I don't know. I'm kind of liking the idea of maybe bunching these up instead of reviewing each individual episode, reviewing it after they've both aired. What do you think?
Yeah, I know that for the first two-parters that we ran across, so The Magician's Apprentice, The Witch's Familiar, then... Under the Lake and Before the Flood, both of those two-parters, we felt like we needed both episodes to give a honest, truthful, good review of it. And I kind of felt the same way with the Zygon Invasion and Zygon Inversion as well. So yeah, I'm totally up for kind of bunching them together, doing a two-parter. That said, if we would have waited to talk about the girl that died and the woman who lived, I think it would have been too much. Those ones definitely felt good to have them broke up. So,
well, maybe we can do it on a case-by-case basis, but I'm liking, especially for this duo of episodes, I'm very happy that we waited, because I think my review of the very first one would have been pretty negative. So, and after seeing the whole thing as one piece, it definitely helped. So I think my review will be a lot more positive.
I'm pretty close there with you. I don't know if I would have been totally negative, but they are definitely stronger when viewed together. The Zygon Invasion left a little bit to be desired. They had a cliffhanger in the middle that I'm sure we'll talk about that wasn't much of a cliffhanger, to be quite honest. So it kind of left you the very last moment of the first part of this two-parter kind of has you rolling your eyes like, okay, we've seen this before. We know what's going to happen. It really doesn't make sense to leave us hanging at this point. But then picking up with the Zygon Inversion, it gets stronger. Things go better. So having that in the middle of an episode as opposed to that the end of an episode, it definitely makes things a little bit easier to talk about going forward.
Well, let's not talk too much about it because we do have a couple things in the news that we can mention before we jump into our review. So I know we had talked about Doctor Who is related to Lego. We talked about there's going to be Lego sets coming out, I think, in December, or at least one Lego set that I think we're both pretty excited about.
Yeah.
And then we have Doctor Who is now part of Lego Dimensions, the video game that's, one of those kind of games where you take the little action figures, put it on the pad, and they show up in the game. I actually have started playing Disney Infinity myself, and which is the same idea as Lego Dimensions, and I'm actually really enjoying it. So now I'm starting to wonder, maybe Lego Dimensions would be something I might want to get for Christmas. But the Doctor Who set for Lego Dimensions is now out there. So you can actually purchase a Doctor Who official 12th Doctor minifig.
That is awesome.
He just happens to be part of a package that costs like $30. So if you're willing to spend $30 for a video game piece that you don't actually have the video game for, just to get that minifig, go for it.
I think I'm gonna hold off just a little bit longer. I have this sneaking suspicion as the relationship grows between Doctor Who or BBC's property of Doctor Who and Lego that we might be seeing a few more Doctor Who related things coming out. I'm holding off for separate minifig bags, the mystery minifigs, including the Doctor. And if they do a set of all 13 Doctors, I would definitely start picking those up from the store and trying to collect all that I could.
Oh man, I would love that. I'm not holding my breath for it. It seems like those minifig, I have some friends actually that could collect those. And it seems like most of those are not like, I don't know how you would call it. They're not specific to a certain thing like Doctor Who. The only exception I've seen is The Simpsons.
Okay.
They did a full like blind bag set for The Simpsons, but usually those are just kind of random minifigs. Like I think right now there's a Halloween themed one where they're just a bunch of different monsters. They've done other ones, but typically you don't see like something bigger like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or, you know, any of the other bigger properties. You don't typically see them in the blind bag minifigs.
Yeah, so. The one thing that I'll toss out there is that a lot of times for bigger properties like Star Wars, I mean, how many sets do they have where ultimately you can pick up vast majority of the minifigs by buying their sets? Mm-hmm. With Doctor Who, I don't know if we're going to see all that many sets. And yet, based on the Lego Dimensions game, they have pretty much all the Doctors designed.
True.
So I don't know. Now, I don't know what it would take, but I don't think it'd be all that difficult for them to toss them out there. And for most of those blind bags, there are usually like 13 to 20 minifigs within the series, or maybe there's less than that. It just seems like it would be way too good of an opportunity for Lego to pass up.
Yeah, it does seem – it definitely seems like something that would be – a good one to do. And
if anything's made for it, the Doctors are made for it.
Yeah. Do you remember the Titan? Is it Titan that did the blind bag stuff? No.
Yep.
Titan did blind boxed stuff.
Titan did have the blind box. I have the Eighth Doctor, the Seventh Doctor under my couch right now.
There was another set called something Builders. Do you remember
Character
that?
Builders?
Character Builders, yeah. That I know I had collected a bunch of the Doctors for that. I don't know if you did any of that blind bag stuff.
I didn't, but okay. I watched you because I think you even live tweeted.
Oh, I did.
You?
I did do a live tweet of some of my blind bag openings. But yeah, so that was a set that I really enjoyed trying to collect. I ended up, so I'm kind of lying. I actually cheated and got the set that had all the Doctors in it, just bought the set.
Okay.
And then I did buy the blind bags for other characters I was looking for, like Amy and Rory and River. But for the Doctors themselves, I kind of cheated and just bought the full set. Now, the only thing that was missing was two Doctors. The 13th, not, he doesn't exist. The 12th, I'm sorry. And the War Doctor. Those two were not included in the set because they didn't exist yet.
Right.
So a friend of mine actually found me the 12th Doctor. But I'm still missing the War Doctor. So to complete my set, I need to find the War Doctor. But that was really, you know, fun trying to get those different characters. So I'd love it if they did the same thing for Lego. And Lego just, you know, character builders versus Lego. Obviously, Lego is the more legit when it comes to collectibles.
Certainly. And especially, I mean, I loved watching the Doctor show up with the character builders. That said, I never cared for their design. I don't know. It was something about them that never, probably because I just love the Lego figurines or the Lego minifigs. So I never jumped on board with the character builders, though it is cool that you have a full set. And I just looked it up and it does look like there's a War Doctor out there somewhere to be found.
I know he's out there. I just don't know if I'm willing to, you know, since he's the last one I need. The chances of me actually pulling him in a blind bag, I'd probably have to get quite a bit until I find him.
Yeah.
So I might probably. I might have to retreat to eBay and see what he's going for, just to grab that last Doctor. So Adam, if you're thinking of like a really good Christmas gift for your favorite co-host, you know, War Doctor it is.
War Doctor. Type it. I'm halfway there. All I need to do is type in Amazon and see if I can find him.
But I think I had seen that there is a rumor that the Doctor may actually appear in the next Lego movie, which would also be pretty cool. I know he's in Lego Dimensions. We've seen him in the trailer for that. But the rumor is that maybe he'll be actually appearing in the next feature film.
Yeah, it seems like having Doctor Who in Lego Dimensions has just opened the door for so many things. And it looks like Lego has done such an incredible job of even in the small capacity that they're working with the property right now, they're doing an incredible job at it. They have an intro for Lego Dimensions that highlights all the doctors. They Instead of the spinning gears of the clock that you see in the normal Doctor Who intro, they have the different gears from the Lego Technic sets, which is really cool to see. So they're doing a really good job at managing the property. And one of the rumors that has come out from that is that it is very, very possible that we could see the Doctor in the next Lego movie, which I really enjoyed the first Lego movie. It was really fun to see what they did with the different characters like Batman, and even in the big council scene where they have all the different minifigs. It was really fun just to see the different personalities that they put in there. It would be fun to see Capaldi, 12th Doctor, show up in the second Lego movie.
Or any of the doctors, or all
Yeah.
of the doctors.
That would be even better.
They could really get creative with how that would work. With regenerations, time travel, the TARDIS. I mean, they could get pretty creative with having the doctor appear in the Lego movie. So, yeah. And they definitely don't shy away from including, big properties in the Lego movie. I know the first Lego movie had, I mean, what? Like you said, it had Batman. It had, I think, one of the Ninja
It had
Turtles.
Ninja Turtles. It had Shaq in it as a
Shaq.
character. It
Yeah.
had Lord of the Rings was
Right.
tossed in there.
Yeah. So,
It had
having.
Abraham Lincoln, for goodness sakes.
Was he the vampire hunter, though?
It quite possibly. I still want to get that second book. It's not a part of this, though.
So, yeah. So that's pretty cool. But some other cool news that you just kind of shared with me right before we started recording was the fact that the Christmas special is going to actually be in theaters. So they're continuing the trend of showing big Doctor Who events in the theater so we can go watch it on the big screen.
Yeah, I was excited to find that. December 28th and 29th, so it's going to be after it shows for the Christmas special, but still, hey, it's only a couple days after, and then you can jump to the theater and watch it. Thanks to Fathom Events again, it seems like anytime this comes up, they're going to be the go-tos for finding the big screen Doctor Who events. So I might have to look to see if I can find a theater in the area where I could go watch some Doctor Who for Christmas this time.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking I'll watch it on Christmas, and then if I felt like the episode was worthy, I would go see it in the theater. But now I'm thinking the tickets will probably sell out before I have that option. So I probably should just go ahead and buy a ticket.
Might as well, right? It's going to be as hot of property as Star Wars is.
Yeah, if it was. Yeah, right.
Oh,
I just
just got you to
calculated, or
pause.
I just comprehended what you said there. I'm not sure. It might be a few billion short of what Star Wars might bring in,
Just a
but
little.
yeah. I mean, the Christmas specials for me have been a little hit and miss the last couple years, so we'll see. Bringing River Song back might be something that will put this one in the positive category for me.
They're definitely on an uptick. Last year's Christmas special was worlds ahead of the year before. That had the regeneration in it. Maybe not worlds ahead, but definitely a couple steps better. I have a feeling, though, that we're going to have a treat in store for us, especially with the return of Riversong, and a certain character might be absent by that point in time. So I'll be excited to see what happens.
True. Maybe we get a new companion.
Maybe.
Christmas special, which is not going to be Osgood, I hear. No
Yeah.
Maisie Williams, no Osgood. You would think we're getting close enough to the end of the season and the Christmas special, and all the news is that Clara is going to be gone, that we would have already gotten an announcement of the cast member or the actress or actor who will play the next companion. Usually by now we would know.
It kind of makes you wonder if they even know yet.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess that's true that maybe they just haven't found the right person yet, or maybe they're actually somehow keeping this one under wraps, which they're typically not usually good at doing.
We
So,
will see. We will see.
but yeah, so next season of Doctor Who is going to happen. I know there was all these kind of ridiculous rumors that maybe we're not getting another season of Doctor Who, or maybe Doctor Who's going to get canceled. But we know it is going to happen. It's been confirmed. The other rumor was that, maybe it was going to be a short season, but that's also been debunked. We will get a full season. What's kind of the news out there on this stuff?
So the concept of a shorter season totally out the door, concept of no season totally out the door, and it seems like Moffat and Capaldi both, with a fervor, have declared that it is going to happen. That said, a new piece of news that just kind of snuck out there, and it totally could still be an unfounded rumor, but what's floating out there now is that the schedule for shooting the next season is pushed back later than what we normally see. So instead of starting shooting January, February, what have you, it looks like it might not be until around April when they start shooting new episodes. So with shooting not happening until April, now the latest theory or rumor is that the season won't start when we're used to seeing it start in September. In fact, it will get pushed back even later, which might leave us with half the season being before the Christmas special and half the season being after the Christmas special.
Man, I feel like it's enough torture to have to wait, after the Christmas special until the next, September that we usually get new episodes. So if they're pushing it back to like October, November, man, it's going to be like Sherlock. Like people, it's going to be like that where you have to wait like 2 years for new episodes.
We're gonna have an especially long wait leading up to the start of the next series. But that said, there wouldn't be as long of a wait maybe between the next series. Maybe something else will come up there. You mentioned before we started though that this isn't totally unfounded. Things have happened like this before, right?
I mean, yeah, Doctor Who definitely the schedule for Doctor Who tends to change. I know when I started watching Doctor Who, the Christmas special wasn't always at the end of the season. There was a season at least one season I can think of that the Christmas special kind of came in the middle. So the Doctor Who schedule has always been something that's changeable. It's not always set in stone, so this isn't completely surprising. And
It's go for it.
Moffat seems to be, I don't know, he just seems to kind of enjoy this kind of thing, as being the showrunner for Sherlock, fans of Sherlock, oh my goodness, those, if we think we get frustrated at, the Doctor Who schedule, imagine being a fan of Sherlock and having to deal with that show kind of 3 episodes and then off the air for how many years?
Yeah,
So.
it's been quite a while since we saw the last one. Like two, maybe, yeah, around 2 years since the last one came out. Anyways, like you said, I think Moffat really enjoys it. Just even some of the other things that he's changed about Doctor Who here recently, he seems to get this strange joy out of just taking a big old stick and poking fandom, just to see how they're going to react, and then he just kind of brushes it off like, eh, what you going to do? Like, I'm in charge, and this is kind of what I say, and you know what? Not everything's sacred, so let's just run with it.
Yep, Sonic sunglasses. Drink
Sonic spectacles.
your tea and deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm
So.
the doctor. Deal with it. So yeah, it was just interesting. I know that there were a lot of rumors, and I'm not gonna lie. I was kind of on the side of we were all gonna be surprised, and we weren't gonna have Doctor Who come next season or next year. But I stand corrected.
That would be horrible. The only thing that would be worth it is if the reason why they didn't have a season of Doctor Who is because they were working on the feature film series.
Oh, that's never gonna
I
happen.
don't know, man. Never say never. Big properties like this tend to make it to the big screen eventually.
we'll see. I don't know. It would be interesting if Lego was the first one to bring Doctor Who to the big screen, the modern big screen.
Right. I don't know. I've always had, we've probably talked about this on the show before, but I've always thought it would be kind of cool if they actually did take a couple years off of the television version of Doctor Who and did make a couple big feature films, but still had it in the same canon. So, like, you know, have the Doctor basically regenerate, or have, oh, let's say Capaldi is the Doctor, the 12th Doctor. They take a season off, they actually make a feature film that starts out with Capaldi as the Doctor, but during that film, he regenerates into whoever. But because it is a big feature film, we can get like a really big name actor to play the Doctor, and then have him die at the end of that film, and then regenerate into whoever the next TV Doctor is going to be.
You know what? I'm watching Harry Potter for the first time, and that's like eight movies long. I could totally see the Doctor going through like an 8-movie story arc. Like, just let it run. Do exactly what you said. Have the first Doctor regenerate in the first movie, and then let a new Doctor run through the next 7 movies. Do something crazy like that. They're doing so many creative things with even Netflix series. Like, do something crazy like that. Let Netflix take over Doctor Who for a series and do 10 or 12, 13 episodes and just do something crazy. I'm all for that. It would be fun to see something like that happen.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it seems to be doing well enough on BBC America. I don't know if, you know, they would give it up anytime soon, but I do kind of like the idea of maybe taking Doctor Who to the next level eventually. So we'll see.
Maybe we'll take a couple years before something like that happens. Like a couple years of, yeah, it going off the air, like you said.
Right. Yeah. Like revive it with the film or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, enough of that ridiculous speculation.
Terribly ridiculous speculation.
I'm ready to jump into this review. We have 2 episodes, so we have to jump in and get this going, I think.
Yeah, let's go for it. 2 episodes, here we go.
All right, so Zygon Invasion and Zygon Inversion, story number 257. This is season 9, episodes 7 and 8. And it was written by Peter Harness. And Stephen Moffat apparently jumped in and helped out writing on the second episode. And it was directed by Daniel Netheim. So we get this, kind of starts out with a tie-in to the 50th anniversary. We get the recap, kind of the recap, not really the recap of everything that happened, but just kind of the recap of the Zygon-related stuff. So it's kind of cool to see the reminder of that happening in the Doctors, the, you know, 10th, 11th, and War Doctors on screen together again.
Yeah, totally. And one thing that was interesting about that, I watched the Doctor Who Extra that comes after both two-parters, so that they don't do one for the first one, they don't do one for just the second one. They kind of lump them together for the Doctor Who Extra. And Moffat made quite a big deal about wanting to use the 50th anniversary to set this up. Like he had this storyline in mind before he even did the 50th anniversary, and he tried to use the 50th anniversary to set this up. It was really interesting to hear him kind of explain that this is something he wanted to do and have happen prior to even the 50th. So it was really cool, because this is the closest tie-in that we've had thus far to the 50th anniversary, even with everything that's happened in the 50th anniversary with Gallifrey, the cup of soup, everything like that. The Doctor knows it's out there. He hasn't even tried looking for it. This is the only direct correlation we have to that 50th right now.
Yeah, we're like 2 seasons after the 50th anniversary, and who would have thought we would have gotten the Zygons before we got Gallifrey?
Right, exactly. I could have sworn that we'd have had Gallifrey way before we saw the Zygons rear their ugly little suction cup faces again.
Let's talk a little bit about the Zygons. This actually was kind of bothering me. I feel like the Zygons needed a better update than they got from the classic stuff. I know the I know that's kind of a Doctor Who staple that they try to keep the design of a lot of these classic monsters. But I don't know, the Zygons, I feel like they just look ridiculous.
Yeah, and you think about the Zygons, like shape-shifting, okay, that in and of itself causes some concern. There's something about a shapeshifter that will just mess with your mind. Then they have these crazy sharp teeth. They got the suction cups and they shoot electricity out of their hands. Like in theory, they're a frightening monster of Doctor Who. Like they can be anywhere, especially in these episodes where we find out that they're all over the place. They've kind of been assimilated into humankind. They have the potential of being one of the scarier monsters conceptually of Doctor Who. And yet I'm with you. Like they show up in their big rubber costumes and they aren't all that frightening. Like you kind of feel like you could just, they kind of feel like bop-ems. Like you could knock them over and they're just going to like weeble wobble back up. Like they're top heavy.
Yeah. They're very comical looking. It just looks like people in gigantic foam costumes, which is, you know, I'm watching the classic Doctors and, you know, we're watching through the first Doctor stuff and that's what we got. We got a lot of people in foam costumes. You know, it was kind of, we laugh about it as we're reviewing those episodes. But now it's 2015 and, you know, I get that they're trying to stay true to the design of some of these creatures, but we've seen updated versions of Cybermen. You know, they don't look nearly as ridiculous as they looked when they first came on screen.
Yeah.
They look intimidating. Daleks, they pretty much look the same, but
they have a few new features thrown in there, like they can fly.
Yeah, but there's definitely been some other aliens that they've done a much more of a modern update on them. Yeah. And, you know, as I was watching through this, everything about these episodes was very ominous, very, you know, just the filming of it, just, it looked like I was watching, like, modern TV. I'm watching scenes where, you know, you have Kate, she's in that office in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And the lighting and the lady comes in and the police outfit and the acting is great. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm watching modern TV right now. I'm watching something that was made in 2015. And then all of a sudden that lady changes into a Zygon and just completely took me out of it. I was like, oh, the Muppet is back. Like, it just...
Yeah, I don't know, or you have Kate in the command center of the Zygons, and she's flanked by, like you said, the two Muppets. Like she's flanked by these goofy looking creatures that are standing beside her. There's something about, like you said, it the episodes as far as like tone of the episodes, definitely solid. They definitely gave you something to be concerned about, but the creatures themselves left much to be desired. In the Doctor Who extra, one of the actors that played or was inside the Zygon suit, he compared it to like being a little kid and throwing on all of your sweatshirts, all of your sweaters all at one time. He's like, that's what it feels like. Like you can't move your arms. It's restricting every time you go. It's like, make it a little bit easier for these guys to move around. Update the look of it. Make them a little bit scarier. But no, yeah, I'm with you.
I'm kind of imagining, you know, they can keep the whole skin tone color, the suction cup idea, the sharp teeth, but just get rid of that giant cone head thing and like, you know, just kind of make them look a little bit more like regular humanoid shaped things.
I have to admit, they're pretty ripped.
Yeah, they do have apparently very good fitness programs. but yeah, so that was just kind of a big complaint overall. But I think, you know, it's something that can be expected when it comes to Doctor Who, that we're going to always have that with a lot of these aliens. We're going to kind of get that cheesy alien look to them. But that aside, we got Osgood back. We've been talking about her coming back, so this is it.
But did we get Osgood back?
Yeah, so much to that. You know, I don't know if we should just talk about it now or we should kind of go talk about it as we're going through stuff. But yeah, the mystery of, you know, of Osgood this episode. I was a little confused about how it all went down. On a second viewing, I think I got it all. But at first, when she first showed up, I was like, wait. We knew she was coming back. But when she showed up on screen, I'm sitting there thinking, we saw her get killed by Missy. But then they quickly explain, you know, there was two of them. You know, we did actually see the Zygon become Osgood. I guess we just never thought that the Zygon would stay Osgood.
Right, and that's one thing that I really appreciated, because I was trying to figure out how they were going to do this. Did the Doctor go back in the past, and this is before the 50th, or no, before Death in Heaven, when Osgood gets zapped? Like, when did these episodes take place? How does it make sense? What's the timeline? Speculation of Osgood just being a Zygon duplication, but then you have all the problems of, well, does Zygon need the host around so that it can keep its form, all those crazy things. But then as soon as they showed the part of the 50th where the Zygon turns into Osgood and like needs the inhaler and everything like that, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, I can totally see that. Because then they have their whole discussion in the basement and everything is made happy. And then we only see one Osgood from there, and we totally forget about the other one. But yeah, I liked how they went about not explaining away, but just pulling back the curtain on what actually happened there. I totally feel like it worked.
Yeah, and the big mystery throughout the whole episode was, you know, was this actually the human version of Osgood and the Zygon version of Osgood got killed by Missy, or the reverse? And the Doctor seemed to be very concerned. I don't know why, but he seemed to be very concerned with which one was which. Which I don't, you know, we'll save it to the end on our speculation, but I don't know if they ever really cleared it up either. So
we'll save that for the end.
Yeah, we'll save that for the end. But so the Doctor, I guess the whole idea of this episode is that the Zygons, part of the peace treaty was that a number of Zygons would stay in hiding and be able to live on Earth. But there's this like fringe group of Zygons who are now revolting. They think all the Zygons that are wanting to stay human are traitors. They're basically Zygon terrorists and want to cause chaos.
Yeah, that's essentially there's the whole 50th anniversary again, where they're at the end and we don't know who's who, and they don't know who's who, which is still kind of confusing to me. They don't know which one's which and which one should be negotiating which side of it. And so they just call everything off. And part of the plan was, like you said, assimilation. But there's that idea of, we don't want to live a fake life. And so they're ready for the Zygons to have their truth, have their life. They want to be who they want to be. And so there's the revolution that arises.
So in the beginning of the episode, we got a scene where the Doctor is talking to these young Zygon, or these young human-looking girls, but apparently they're Zygons, which I thought it was funny. One of the girls is wearing a Cinderella backpack. And I'm thinking, okay, BBC, or Doctor Who is not yet owned by Disney. It'll happen eventually, because Disney buys everything. But, you know, I wonder how much money they had to pay Disney to get the rights to use that Cinderella backpack. In fact, he actually calls the girl Cinderella at one point.
It was a fair trade. They gave him the 11th Doctor for Disney XD, and Disney let them use the backpack. Doctor Who got nothing else for that.
I did think about the Disney XD connection, that we're now getting 10th Doctor episodes on Disney XD, and I thought about that. I was like, oh, maybe there is some kind of a Disney agreement with Doctor Who right now that they're letting them use some imagery like a Cinderella backpack.
I'll take the Doctor Who animated series in a couple years.
the Pixar.
There you go. Doctor
Who Pixar movie. Maybe that'll be our first step into the big screen.
Yeah.
But I kind of had said that the Zygons were, you know, almost like terrorists. There were some pretty, like, just spot on parallels to modern day terrorism as we know it. Down to the, you know, hostage on video with the terrorist flanking them on each side with a flag in the background.
Yep.
You know, some pretty disturbing imagery that we are aware of, because, you know, modern day terrorists tend to use that type of thing, you know, in some of this disturbing videos that they'll put out to cause fear. So was it a little too spot on for you? that it was that similar to things that we know?
There were moments that I didn't feel too comfortable, and that might sound silly, but just based on current events, there's aspects like that that I see in television that are, I don't know, that's why I don't watch some of the shows that like heavily play on those themes. I just don't like those concepts. It's not that I'm trying to ignore the reality. It's just reality gives us enough of it already. Some of it did feel maybe just a hair too close to our present day reality. That said, we're not the only ones that are saying that. That's a common thread or a common theme after the first episode of Doctor Who was Doctor Who's commentary on terrorism, on immigration, even on why we should not allow immigrants into our country because this is just going to happen. And basically, like, is Doctor Who fear mongering with the concepts that they're putting out there because of how close it is to present day reality? It was really interesting to read through some of the commentaries that came up just over the course of the week after the first episode, the Zygon invasion played out.
I didn't really see it as fear-mongering. I guess I could see some of the immigration parallels. I definitely saw it more as a stance against war, like an anti-war type feel to this, to both episodes. It definitely did feel a little political, but that's not odd for Doctor Who. They tend to kind of do that from time to time, not veiling their political stances on certain things. But I guess some of the parallels I saw were that video scene, but then also kind of the idea that there is a group of people who, because of the fear of majority of the populace, that they automatically judge a group of people, even though only a small group of them are the ones that are actually the radicals. It's kind of like we just paint it in broad strokes, you know, like, oh, well, all Zygons are bad because there's just this one, what they kept saying, splinter cell, which is another term that we hear a lot in modern day news, that there's just the splinter cell of Zygons. But because of this small group, this small radical group, the rest of the nation is actually seeing all Zygons as being bad. Which is obviously a parallel to kind of what happened after 9/11 and things like that with Muslims. So it did seem to me, I'm kind of with you. There was a level of being a little uncomfortable because it was almost too close.
Right. We've come to enjoy Doctor Who, or at least I have, for kind of the imaginative side of Doctor Who. So, I mean, we had two stories, or one story of Vikings and outer space aliens, essentially, and like not very closely tied to reality. And those are the stories that I enjoy. But like you said, we've had stories similar in the past where there's definitely themes that run through the episodes, and I can take those. I definitely can. But this one seemed to get pretty close to reality, especially with some of the themes that it was drawing on, and even how closely they mimic, like you said, the idea of people groups. Should we allow assimilation of people groups into our culture for fear that there would be a small number of them that rise up in revolution, that rise up in acts of terrorism? Those concepts were very, very present within the first episode, especially of Doctor Who. I don't feel like within the second episode of this two-parter, the Zygon inversion, that they were as prevalent. It seems like at that point, they already established the foundation that the rest of it was based on, and then kind of moved forward from there, knowing that you already had that in your mind. But yeah, it was an interesting that you asked that question. But yeah, I don't think we're alone in those feelings.
So kind of the plan for Unit is like kind of our defense here in this situation, and their plan is to possibly use some sort of a nerve gas to actually kill all the Zygons. Which seems like a pretty ridiculous plan.
Were you aware of that story thread from, I guess, the last time the Zygons invaded? Where the doctor, there was the nerve gas developed that turned Zygons inside out and they just became puddles. And the doctor steals it away. Were you aware of that storyline?
No, was that something that happened earlier in Doctor Who, or is like before the 50th?
Yeah, I believe that's a classic storyline. That whole, yeah, that's a whole classic storyline of that taking place, and they're just bringing it up again. There was a nerve gas, and the doctor stole it away because he doesn't believe in that type of thing.
Right? Huh. Well, that's kind of cool. I didn't know that was actually a reference back to the classic stuff, so that's kind of a cool tie-in there. But yeah, obviously the Doctor is very anti-killing in any form, which I think in this, sometimes, you know, the Doctor, you know, his whole anti-killing, you know, can seem a little, like in certain situations, seem a little extreme. Like, okay, man, like this person is trying to kill you, maybe it's okay to kill them. But in this situation, it makes a lot of sense. You know, it seems like a pretty messed up plan on the human's part to just blanket kill all the Zygons just because there's a small group of them that are dangerous.
Yeah, and I think along those lines, as far as like the Doctor's his pacifism, if you will, I think he gives a really good explanation, and I'm sure we'll get to it at the very end of the Zygon inversion, where it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense, where the Doctor hasn't always been where he is. His stance hasn't always been where it is right now for those types of matters. It's just he's kind of gotten to that point because of events that have taken place, or I guess looking back on it, events that no longer have happened. But
well, we can talk about the Doctor's preachy speech at the end when we get there. But
And just to let you know, the classic storyline is Terror of the Zygons.
Okay. So the Zygons have kidnapped Osgood. So the Doctor's trying to kind of go rescue her, but at the same time, the unit wants to basically just destroy this entire town because they know that that group of Zygons is there. But the Doctor's trying to buy time. He kind of talks him into letting him go in and try to get Osgood out before they destroy the entire town. And we get a scene with, you know, the military or the unit soldiers kind of falling prey to the Zygons' trickery, which leads to their death. That scene for me was a little rough. It's one of those scenes where you're like screaming at the TV, like, "You idiots!" You know, it's so obvious. Like that one was hard for me to watch as I'm watching this guy, and you know, one of the Zygons is pretending to be his mother, and she comes out, and the drama of the scene, and I'm just like, come on, like, it obviously is not your mom. Like, well, why would your mom be here?
Like, yeah, I'm totally with you. Like the scene, the different aspects of the scene, it was spot on. Like they did a really good job of the scene, but the whole idea of the scene itself, I was the same way. Like you are yelling at the screen, like they aren't your family. She's not your mom. Like you asked her a question, let her answer the question. Like that's what you were supposed to do. You asked the question so she can answer. And she's saying, I don't need to answer this question for you. Well, I'm sorry. Shoot her then. Like, just be done with it. Like, it's her own fault at that point. But
I got it when she first came out. When she first comes out and the lead soldier is kind of like, oh, it's my mom, you know.
Right? Unexpected, right?
Yeah, and I get the moment. I get the moment of hesitation. But as he's asking her questions and she's just dodging the questions, and then all of a sudden all these other people come out that just happen to be the family of the other soldiers, it's pretty obvious at that point that they're all being tricked. So it was kind of hard for me to believe that these soldiers, all these well-trained unit soldiers, who probably were trained to be ready for this, all just fell prey to it and died.
Yeah. I mean, the unit is supposed to be like top of the tops, right? They're not just some mindless soldiers. Like unit should be better than any other guy or individuals that you find in any other form of service. They're not just, yeah, you think they would have been prepared for this. Even when they, I mean, their commanding officer gave them the speech beforehand,
Yeah.
like, you know what they're gonna do.
You know what they're capable of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not only do the Zygons have a very good fitness program, but they also have very good acting classes. Because
Yes.
apparently all these Zygons can really, pretend to be humans very well. Not only this Zygon that was pretending to be the mother, which I did find kind of funny because in certain moments you have a Zygon that is acting like this guy's mom. And whatever the Zygon, whoever the Zygon is putting on the performance of their life. They seem
Yes.
like a human. You have another scene with Kate, and she meets the policewoman in the town. And that woman is, she's going into backstory. She's talking about how, the Zygons came. I mean, she's basically giving the whole history of it. And then we find out that eventually that she was a Zygon too. But then there's other Zygons they bump into, like the guys that were in the car, or just about every other Zygon, that they all act almost like robots. So apparently they just picked out the couple that needed to play really important parts. They actually went into the Zygon like theater group and were like,
The other
"Hey,
ones were extras.
we need you to play this part because, nobody else is that good." But it was just kind of funny how certain Zygons were just really good at acting and the other ones were not good at all.
Yeah, and like Zygons must have, because they didn't really have their parents captured or their family members captured, did they? So, how did they take on their form? Can they read minds and take on that form? Like that was the one part
Yeah.
I was confused by. Like,
Actually,
how?
they did explain that a Zygon can look into your mind. So if you're thinking about a family member, they can actually go in and get that out of your mind and
Okay.
become that family member. So I guess the Zygons, as they were inside the building, were, imprinting on the soldiers' minds and able to pull out the images of what their family looked like.
Gotcha. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so
But they don't know the name of your stuffed animal then.
no, he wasn't thinking about
Only see
that.
pictures. They don't see facts.
Is actually kind of interesting, yeah, because if they can kind of look into your brain, you would think that if he was asking her questions, he would be thinking of the answers
Right.
and that they would be able to pull it right out and kind of use that to continue the cover. But we're getting a little nitpicky at this point.
Yeah, nitpicky. I mean, there's Zygons, for goodness sakes.
But yeah, the stuff with Kate in New Mexico, that was kind of another time where I was, it's like right away, at least for me, right away I thought this is a Zygon. This woman that, why would the entire town is empty and this woman just happened to stay behind? Like if the Zygons invaded and killed everyone and she lived through it, you think she would kind of maybe go on to the next town and go get help, and not stick around. So that was kind of a bit of a telegraphing, I think. And did you see that one coming?
You're gonna laugh. I didn't at first.
Oh, usually it's me that doesn't see
I
this
know,
stuff.
right? I figured it was like, I don't know, Walking Dead. You kind of just hang out for a while. You lock yourself in a house and you wait to see if any other survivors wander through your town. But I didn't pick up on it at first. I mean, later on it was like, oh snap, she really is one. There were too many pictures of Zygons like around the office to think that, I don't know, that she wasn't one. There were like family pictures. But yeah, so I didn't see that one coming at first, and then I did see it coming. Yeah, I thought that was cool that they at least had a cool aerial shot of Kate driving into the village or the town.
Yeah. Well, we get a well, basically the doctor does end up, rescuing Osgood, even though they decide to bomb the town anyways. He gets out of there with her, and gets on his, president of the universe, no, president of the world.
Yeah, I think it's just the world.
Yeah. He hasn't graduated to the universe yet,
No,
but
he's just a Time Lord.
yeah, so he's president of the entire world and he gets on his presidential plane. And he has an interesting conversation with Osgood. He's trying to figure out if she's a Zygon or not. And she gives the whole explanation that she's, it doesn't matter, you know. And we get the idea of the hybrid comes back up.
Yep. Second.
Third.
Third. Third version of the hybrid.
Yeah, third time we've had the idea across, well, we're 8 episodes in now, so 4 storylines.
Four
so
stories.
3 out of the 4 stories have had the idea of this hybrid that keeps coming up. So I'm starting to think that this is some kind of ongoing theme that is going to mean more than maybe we thought originally.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how it plays out, especially with some of the rumors floating around about the different episodes that are yet to come, and even the last 2 episodes. I can't see where the idea of hybrid comes into play, but yeah, it definitely seems like a common thread, a theme that's flowing throughout, like you said, 3 out of the 4 stories that we've gotten so far, unless I missed something in Before the Flood and Under the Lake, or Under the Lake and Before the Flood. Unless I missed something there, it is in 3 of the 4.
And think about something that's coming up. We know that River Song is coming back.
Yep.
And what is River Song? She's a hybrid.
Yeah, she is. You're right.
She's a human child who became a Time Lord because of traveling through space or whatever, but she's kind of part Time Lord, part human.
Yeah.
So they could bring this theme all the way up into the Christmas special.
Where we're going to find out that Clara is a hybrid of some sort.
Right. Yeah, she's a hybrid human Time Lord as well, because she's starting to act like she's a Time Lord.
Speaking of Clara, so like in the middle of everything else that's going on, we have Clara, the doctor's trying to call her, which I think is interesting. Like, she's always waiting to jump on the TARDIS. She's always waiting to like go the next go around. And yet the doctor has to leave her 100 and something voicemails before she finally picks up her phone. But she wanders into her apartment. We have this whole situation with the little boy who his parents aren't there. And then she goes in and yeah, they drag him into the elevator, all sorts of weird stuff. But come to find out, Zygons are now capturing people from around London.
Yeah.
And Clara gets captured.
Yeah, Clara is now, I guess who we thought was Clara is actually a Zygon. And with the cool name of Bonnie.
Yeah, I'm cool with that name.
And then as she reveals herself, they kill that one woman. What was her name? Jack?
Yeah.
That poor woman.
That was a
woman.
Bummer. She made it through 2 episodes.
She was super nervous the whole time. And then, they killed her. That was kind of sad. But, yeah, I thought this whole first episode was really boring to me. And there was a lot of it I just didn't like. I didn't really like the Zygons. I didn't like the military stuff that was going on. I didn't like how close it was to, you know, modern day terrorism, and just I had a bad feeling about the whole episode right up until the end. I think once they did the whole reveal that Clara was actually a Zygon the whole time, and then the whole thing with her like trying to take out the plane with the you know, surface to air missile, that's when I was like, oh, and then it was like to be continued, and I was like, oh, like right at the end it caught my attention. Kind of like the same way the whole Before the Lake, Under the Water thing, or whatever those episodes are called, where like right at the end of the first episode, you see the doctor like dead outside the window, and you're like, oh, and then it's the end of the episode. That's kind of how I felt at the end of this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I had a hard time with this first episode. It kind of felt like we were paralleling again with Under the Lake and Before the Flood. Like, it was just kind of slow. It wasn't really moving. It jumped between things kind of odd. It didn't really seem like I cared all that much for anything that was going on until they killed Jack. And then it's like, oh, okay, this is getting interesting. But as soon as Bonnie fired the surface-to-air missile at the presidential plane, I knew the doctor wasn't going to die, and I kind of felt like that was a bummer way to end the episode. Like, I wanted something a little bit better to go on at that point, than just for that to happen. But I kind of ended on a low point for me, to be
Really?
honest. Yeah.
I kind of liked Bad Clara. I liked Bonnie version of Clara.
Oh yeah, I definitely like Bonnie better than Clara. No, there's no doubt about that. I was kind of interested to know if Claire ever made it out. But yeah, I don't know. I think the girl who died and the woman that lived just set my expectations so stinking high for this episode that although this episode definitely wasn't the lowest point of the season, because of where it fell in the episodes that have gone, I just felt really like low after this episode. Not too positive, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I was actually, after watching this episode, even with the kind of uptick at the end, I was pretty disappointed and didn't expect that I was even going to like the second half. But luckily, the second half did improve the episode. But Clara, kind of the big thing in the second half of the episode, or the second part of this duology, is Clara and Bonnie are kind of having this mental battle because Claire's subconscious is still able to affect, I guess, what Bonnie's doing, and they're communicating. So that was kind of a big part of this episode. Interesting that Claire's subconscious actually lives in her apartment.
Right.
I thought that was kind of interesting, but I guess you have to kind of show her in some way, so it would make sense that it would be kind of in her own home.
Yeah, I kind of similar to last season's Christmas special, I kind of viewed it as like the dream crabs. Like, as the Zygon is taking over your mind, as the Zygon is taking who you are and collecting all the data about you, it just gives you a comfortable place to live. Like, everybody else is fully awake in their subconscious as well, and the Zygon has just given them this fun life that they can live in the meantime.
That way they don't freak out and
Yeah,
like.
that way they don't freak out, kind of like the dream crabs. Like, as it's eating you, it gives you pleasant thoughts.
Ah, that makes sense.
But other than the black toothpaste, which totally, I don't know, that totally grossed me out.
This would have been a perfect opportunity to bring back Danny Pink.
I know, right? I was waiting for him to show up. I
I mean,
seriously
if
was.
she was in her own head and like, in an alternate reality kind of situation, why not have Danny Pink hanging out with her there?
That's what the dream crabs did, right?
Maybe it would have been too much where she would have been automatically realized that it was fake. But she figured it out pretty quick anyways.
Yeah, I mean, she as soon as she saw the clock mess up and then the tube of toothpaste that said this is toothpaste and then it was black and then she kind of wanders out and turns on the TV and yeah, it was she's a quick study.
But she has an uncanny amount of control over Bonnie, I guess you could say. Like, we realize why Bonnie missed her first shot because Clara tilted the TV.
Yeah, yes.
I guess it kind of makes sense though. They're showing us how she's affecting her, in a way that makes sense. Obviously, by tipping the TV, she's not actually doing anything, but that's just her way of connecting. I don't know.
Yeah, they're linked during the process of like this transfer. As soon as the transfer is complete, then Zygon can be gone with Clara, can be done with her. But during that process, it seems like there's a stronger connection between the host and the parasite than what we would think. And yeah, tipping the TV or visualizing in your mind and typing with your fingers, like all of that is creating a function. Your mind is then controlling the function of the Zygon.
Right. In a way, Osgood was kind of the companion this episode.
Yeah, and I was totally for it.
Yeah, she was. I liked the conversations her and the doctor had. I thought it was funny that Osgood has actually thought about how she would kill the doctor if she ever had to. Which is, they kind of paint her as like the fangirl of the doctor. And so it's probably something that, all Doctor Who fans like us have probably thought of, like, oh, if somebody really wanted to kill the doctor, they should just do this. So it's kind of funny to see that, you know, this person who is such a fan of the Doctor that she's even gone so far as to think how to kill him. It was funny.
Yeah, I like you said, I totally enjoyed the conversations that they had. The questions that she asked, she's not the same, like, bubbly, starstruck Osgood that we had in the 50th anniversary. Like, you can definitely tell that she's been through a lot more. She's kind of mellowed out. It's kind of just what it is now. But the interactions that she had with the Doctor were still really good. Like, knowing his character traits. Oh, you're trying to be funny now to essentially diffuse the situation. Oh, this is the first time that I've seen you smile. Oh, you're quiet now because I mentioned Claire. Like, she's totally in tune with who the Doctor is as a person, as a character. And kind of what you said, like, she's a fan of the Doctor, and it's what we all do. Like, I don't know, I've created stories in my mind. Like, I've thought through, if the zombie apocalypse would happen, here's where I'd go, here's what I'd do, here's what I'd grab with me. Like, you think through those things when you're a fan of something.
I didn't know you were such a fan of zombies.
I'm not. I'm terribly freaked out by them. But I have this horrible fear that they're real, and so I go to great extents to prepare for them.
When you started talking about the zombie apocalypse, I totally thought you were going to bring Doctor Who into the equation. Like, well, if the zombie apocalypse happens, all I have to do is just contact the Doctor, and then he'll come get me in the TARDIS.
No, the Doctor, I think, would be the worst zombie ever. And you actually deal with the Doctor the same way you deal with a zombie. Straight to the head.
Well, that's what Osgood said, right? Between, yes. Between the eyes, what did she say, 12 times if I had to, or something like that?
Yeah, which I loved.
But speaking of shots to the head, I loved the part with, I mean, I know the whole idea of the Doctor being a pacifist and stuff like that is, you know, good for him. I like the fact that he doesn't like to kill. But it is kind of nice to see moments in Doctor Who. It is all fictional. It is nice to see some characters kind of rise to the occasion and not necessarily think before, you know, think about it too much and take out somebody if they have to. And I liked that. I liked the scene with Kate, where they realize that Kate survived her confrontation with the Zygon, and the Doctor's like, "How did you survive?" And she's like, "Five rounds, rapid." You know, I thought, yeah. You know, she just took that Zygon out. So Kate is a bit of a badass.
And they show her, because they have a little flashback of her firing, and she doesn't seem to be too concerned. It's kind of like deadpan the entire time.
She took him out. Then, well, she told that story right after she had just taken out two other Zygons. So
yeah, she's definitely one of those ones who's willing to pull the trigger when the circumstances arises. Which, so she survives. She tricks Bonnie into making her think that she's a Zygon from New Mexico. The U.S. is sorted, so it's time to move on. And then she leads the Doctor down to the basement, finds all the pods where all the people are, and then she destroys the two Zygon guards. And then we're left with her, time to take care of the rest of the threat.
Right, which is... getting to the boxes.
Yeah.
Are we at the boxes now?
The Black Archive.
Yeah. So we got Bonnie, who's gotten into the Black Archive because she looks like Clara. And so she can use her body print or whatever to get through there. And so we get kind of to the big scene of this episode, and I guess of both episodes, where we have the face off. Bonnie gets there, realizes there's two boxes, kind of has the conversation, I think it's over the phone, right, with the Doctor at first?
Yep.
And then the Doctor shows up with Kate.
Which, he shows up incredibly fast.
Yeah, which is fine. They needed it. They needed that story to kind of wrap up. But yeah. I guess they were close enough, or, you know, who knows what means of transportation he took. But, yeah, this is kind of the big thing. This is the big scene in this episode. We get the face off. We get... the Osgood boxes, and we get the Doctor, not necessarily like a monologue, but we definitely get the big Doctor speech.
Yeah.
Which we haven't gotten a lot with Capaldi. What was your take on kind of this big Doctor moment? Were you, you know, swelling with pride? with this doctor in this moment, or was he a little preachy? Like, how did you take it?
I think that the doctors, this part in the episode where they're in the Black Archive, you have Kate on one side getting ready to press the buttons, you have Bonnie on the other side getting ready to press the buttons. This scene, the doctor's monologue slash dialogue slash speech really made the two-parter for me. Like, if it wasn't for this part of it, I don't know if I would feel so positive about either episode. But getting one of those doctor speeches that I've come to love, and I don't know, they're always so fun to watch. And I feel like up to this point, this is probably the biggest one outside of the Boneless. This is the biggest one that the doctor, that Capaldi's doctor, has given. And I really enjoyed it. I felt like Capaldi did a really good job. And again, it refers back to the 50th anniversary. We have another box with a button. It's the idea of war and consequences. It's the idea of the child throwing the tantrum, and you don't really know what you want. Like, stop and think about this. I really liked it. Did you think it came across a little preachy?
No, yeah, it did, but but that's the doctor for you. I mean, he knows better than us puny humans. We can't think for ourselves. You know, I thought it did come across a little bit, kind of like, let me tell you what's best. But I enjoyed it. You know, I thought it was you know, everything he said, I thought was powerful, and you know, he kind of was paralleling what was happening there. You know, I forget how he worded it, but it's like, this is like every war in history, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he makes some really powerful points, and he does talk about kind of how, you know, the bratty child and, all of that stuff. He jumps in and out of like being very intriguing and serious to like, when he did the whole like game show host imitation.
See, I loved that he kind of like randomly came into this southern United States game show host accent, but it wasn't perfect. Like, it was a flawed accent, and then it just kind of disappeared, and then it came back, and then it disappeared. I loved that.
I didn't like that part, the game show host part. I was just like, what? Like, but other than that, like, you know, you're right, this whole scene definitely makes this two-parter. It gives the doctor his big moment. And I think toward the end of his kind of lecture is really where it gets really powerful, when he starts talking about, you know, how he has gone through, you know, he's like, you think this is a war, like this little thing? And he kind of like talks about how he's had to make decisions, and he's done things that, you know, he's ashamed of. And, when, you know, I'm forgetting exactly how he worded it, but, you know, kind of how he's talking about, what do you do with it? You grab onto it until it burns your hand, and So no one else has to deal with it, kind of thing. I thought it was pretty interesting to see the doctor kind of open up like that emotionally, and kind of share those kind of inner feelings. So I really enjoyed, especially the end portion of his little speech.
Yeah, definitely. That's like, yeah, like we said, it makes the episode. I feel like without that, it would have been missing a piece that gave it weight, like something that would tie it back to Doctor Who, something that would give it that feeling of being Doctor Who. And that speech totally made it. And I love how, as he's going through, Kate closes the lid on his box and he says, thank you. And she just says, I'm sorry. Like, it finally hits her. And then Bonnie slowly comes to the realization of that it really isn't a good idea. And then she starts to realize that the box is actually empty, which I think is such a cool reveal. And the doctor's like, you know how you know that? Because you're starting to think like me. And essentially, it stinks, doesn't it? It's such a great scene at that point. I totally loved it. Yeah, it probably came across a little preachy, but I think it felt so good by the time we get to the end of it.
So what was the whole deal with Kate and them saying that it took her like 15 times?
that she's probably gone to that button multiple times and wanted to kill everybody or all the Zygons, and they've gone through it multiple times with her and just keep wiping her mind. That's the way I understood it.
Like
Like,
that specific situation, including Bonnie?
no, I think like the first time that I watched that scene, I was like, wait, what a second, what's going on here? Like, she's done this before with other Zygons. I think that's not what they're referring to. I think it's more along the lines of, I mean, Kate from the very beginning of the episode or of the two-parter was like, hey, we need to get this gas. We just need to kill everybody. Like, this isn't going to work. Let's just kill everybody. So I feel like they've just gone through the same scenario of Kate wanting to kill everybody, being standing over the box with the two buttons there, and like asking the doctor, which button do I need to press? And the doctor needing to essentially talk her down from the ledge. And then they wipe her memory and let her do it all over again.
See, I read it as, and I still think it might be this way, this is the way I'm interpreting it, is that her and Bonnie did have that face off a number of times, and because the boxes were empty, they, in different points, one of them made the wrong decision, another one made the wrong decision. The doctor kept basically wiping their memories and starting over because he was trying to get his point
Oh,
across.
snap. You're so right. It wasn't like, yeah, it's all within that same period of time they did it 13 times, 15
Right.
times. And that's why at that one during that scene he's like, "And I think you're getting really close."
Right.
Like, you can see that he's finally making a breakthrough, and it's not just in that conversation. It was probably in all sorts of other
Yeah,
conversations.
so he
And they would
practiced
press
that
the button,
speech
they'd find out that it was empty, and then they'd get really angry, so he'd wipe their memories and do it all over again.
until he finally got it right, you know, until he would finally found the right
That's
words to inspire.
brilliant.
So.
That is so much better than what I was thinking. That is brilliant.
So yeah, I
I
think
agree with you. I don't agree with you about there being nothing underneath the blanket, but I agree with you on this one.
but I'm right on both accounts. But yeah, so that was kind of a cool creative way to end it, I thought too, to add that little piece to it that the doctor hadn't just given that speech one time and convinced them, but it was something that he had to kind of rehearse over and over until he got it right. But yeah, this kind of leads to, so I guess in a way, Bonnie has now redeemed herself. You know, she didn't make the wrong decision, but she has kind of shown herself to be generally a bad character throughout the episode, was willing to kill off the entire human race.
Probably multiple times now.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, it's like she's part of the team now. Like she just, I know the doctor's whole big thing was like, I forgive you. You know, he said it a couple times. I forgive you. But I get the forgiving, I don't necessarily get the trusting.
And the only thing I can think of there is like the idea of forgiving. Yeah, I totally understand. Like, that makes sense. The idea of trusting. I think because towards the end of his speech, where he says, like, you're starting to think like me, like you feel the same weight that I feel. You feel the same like pain that I feel to some extent. I think that's what he trusts. It's not necessarily that he trusts Bonnie, it's that he trusts that feeling will guide her the right direction. Like, could that be misplaced? Totally. But I think that's what he's trusting in. Like, because of how she's starting to think, because she's starting to realize what the doctor was trying to explain to her, that is why he trusts her. Because he knows that she can't live with the consequences of what she would end up doing.
I still don't think I would have trusted her. Not to become the new Osgood. So she basically the kind of the thing at the end is, you know, we get our two Osgoods back because Bonnie the Zygon is now Osgood the Zygon.
Yeah, there was a vacancy.
Right. So yeah, interesting. So I kind of felt like they revealed at the end that the Osgood that was with the doctor majority of the time was actually the human Osgood. Do you feel like, I think we were kind of talking pre-show, it sounded like you thought there's still a possibility that they might both be Zygons.
Yeah, I think it's totally open. I don't feel like there's any strong indication one way or the other. Like, the doctor tried to pinpoint her and say, oh, you know what? You have to be the human because the Zygon can't survive without the human copy. And then she's like, well, Zygons don't need that anymore. So there's that theory, like, blown out the window. Everything, yeah, I feel like they just totally left it open. So they could both essentially be Zygons, or she could be the human, and then we could have a new Zygon. I don't think they really ever gave any indication one way or the other. She's just me.
I think to keep up the idea that one Osgood is keeping the other one in check, that one has to be, you know, of the mindset of the humans and the other has to be the mindset of the Zygons, so they can kind of keep each other in balance, I think would indicate that the one that was with the doctor the whole time was the human.
But she's become the hybrid. Like, she is the perfect melding of the two. There technically doesn't need to be a second one. But Osgood just got lonely.
True. True.
So. It's more the picture of it.
So did Osgood actually have a twin sister?
No, I don't think so.
That died or something?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Because they did do the whole, like, she lost her sister. But I think that was just, again, referring to the relationship that they shared.
Okay.
Over the short period of time that they shared it.
Okay. I thought maybe, because you would think that because there's already one Osgood, that the Zygon would have chosen another host, but... Huh. So then the last thing, I guess, that is worth mentioning is when the Doctor and Clara go into the TARDIS, Clara asks the Doctor, you know, you thought I was dead, didn't you? What was that like? And then he says, it was the longest month of my life. And then she says, well, it wouldn't have been more than 5 minutes. And then he kind of gives her this look. And he
says, I'll be the judge of that.
I'll be the judge of time. What? Were we supposed to read into that? Like, does something else happen where there was actually more time that passed than we realized?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think two things on that one, and I could be totally off base. The concept of relativity of time, like the classic quote from, I think it was Einstein who said, no, it probably wasn't Einstein. It's just probably some crazy guy that said this, but like
Stephen Hawking, maybe.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking it's probably even more random than that. But like the idea of sitting on a stove or sitting or putting your hand on a stove and a second feeling like eternity, or kissing a girl and a, no, that's wrong. Something along the lines of, like, in different situations, time can feel differently for different people. So, like, something might feel like an eternity for me, but it feels like a couple seconds for you. Whereas something might feel like an eternity for you, but it feels like a couple seconds for me. So I think the doctor, just based on the relationship that he has with Clara and how vital that relationship is for him, like, that whole idea of him being in that hope phase, like, there's hope that Clara could still be around. It had a bigger impact than I think both of us want to give Claire's death credit for the doctor. And so I think for him, it felt like the longest month of his life, even though it was only for a couple minutes during that period of time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
And then the other part is he's the Time Lord. So I think it's kind of just funny that he said that he can be the judge of time because he knows time better. But
yeah, I just thought it just seemed like something odd for him to say, with there not being more meaning behind it. So I was thinking, oh, maybe this will tie in later on when she actually does die. Maybe there'll be some kind of a time. Maybe he already knows at this point how she dies. And
I don't know. I think it just has to do with the doctor. I think the doctor has stronger feelings for Clara, or at least they're building it up that he has stronger feelings for Clara than what we might think. Like the whole idea of you just come to the point where there's someone that you don't want to lose. I know that I asked you if he was referring to Clara and you said no. I think he's referring to someone else. I really do think he was referring to Clara there. Like, I think that Claire's the one that he can't lose. And then the idea of having losing her and it being a month to him, I think if we lose Clara, and depending on how we lose Clara, it's going to destroy the doctor.
I mean, they're definitely trying to build it that way. They definitely are.
Definitely.
I don't know if I buy it just because I'm not buying the chemistry. I'm not buying like that. This version of the Doctor seems to care that much about this version of his companion. I just don't see it. Seems like he's had much more of an attachment to other companions, but they definitely are trying to sell us on the idea, and it's like intentionally that they're, I think they're trying to prepare us, you know, for when she leaves to try to make it feel like it's a really big deal.
Yeah.
But I'm not there yet with this companion.
I don't know. He wasn't a hugger, but he's hugged all over Clara now. Like, he's changed a lot when it comes to how he approaches Clara, just even in this series. Like, series 8, there was definitely wedges driven between them, but they were still trying to figure out who each other were after him being Smith and no longer being Smith, which Clara and Smith had a pretty strong relationship there as well. So I don't know. I'm, like you said, they're probably just trying to make it, they're setting it up to be a heck of a lot bigger come the end.
True. All right. Well, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about before we wrap it up?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Well, as usual, you can leave us a review on iTunes. If you listen to our show and you enjoy it, we'd love for you to head over to iTunes, leave us a nice 5-star review. You can also follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, Bad Wolf Radio. You can search for us as Bad Wolf Radio. We are the one with the black and white logo. And you can always send us feedback, shoot us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. And until next time.
Later days.
That might be the most high-pitched later days that you've ever
been. Later days! Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
Well, you were typing something before it.
Yeah, sorry. I'm trying to think of 7 questions.
Oh. Are you still trying to pay your car registration fees?
No, I have 4 questions down, but I can't think of 3 more questions, and it's killing me.
Well, ask me 4 questions.
Wait. I just need 2 more questions.
I'll tack it on at the end.
Okay. Question number 1. Was Osgood's first death more impactful than Danny's?
No.
Is it cheapened that Osgood came back?
No.
Are you afraid of elevators now?
No.
Would you shoot your mom?
No.
I'm sorry. It's just so perfect. Is Osgood's name really Petronella?
Yes.
Is the doctor's name really Basil?
No.
And are you a Zygon?
I'm me.
Okay. And I had another question twice. Would you shoot your mom?
Because you didn't believe my first answer.
That's the bonus.
if my mom was a Zygon,
why do I have that one? Oh no, that okay. Yeah, no. Okay, scrap that. You can cut those 7 questions out.
Why?
Because they weren't really good.
They were good.
The only other one was: do you think we'll ever find out which Osgood is Osgood?
Oh no. They'll always be coy with that. Okay.